Leslie, I'm very interested in hearing what you've discovered about the experience of working through the hindrances.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, everybody, for being here. And I'm very happy to be able to talk a little bit more with you tonight. And I actually will be continuing this talk next month. So this is part one of, actually, it's part one of three talks that I want to talk, that I want to share with you all. And it really grows out of my talk that I did about my retreat experience. So, for those of you that didn't weren't here last month when I talked about being on silent retreat, I'll just say very briefly that I shaped my conversation about that retreat experience. It was a 10-day silent retreat, and I shaped my conversation about it around my experience with seeing all of the hindrances arise in my consciousness in the course of those 10 days. I'm not sure ill will was there. I think I've been thinking about that lately, and I may not claim ill will, but the other four I can claim heartily. And so I've been thinking about it, and as I said to Peter, we had a conversation last night with our teachers, and I was saying that I have not been able to let go of that retreat. My experience of that retreat keeps being modulated and affected as time goes by, and as, of course, as my memory of the experience does too. But my engagement with the hindrances, just even though it was very strong during the retreat, it has continued to be, of course, a subject of observation and great interest for me in my practice. And so I want to say before I start going into all of this that my particular angle here with the talks that I do for you guys, really almost everything grows out of my own personal experience as a meditator. Sometimes a good experience, sometimes a not so good experience. And because I'm a teacher of people new to meditation, I have just kind of focused in the last several years of my life on what can I learn? What can I come to understand? The Dharma is important, of course, but what can I come to understand and know that will help me teach people about meditation and how to do it and how to do it happily. So that's you probably maybe already observed that about me. You may not have observed it, but we're having great conversations in our teachers' meetings about kind of what our angles. Peter brings his unique angle, April brings her unique angle, and especially now that she's getting into all the AI stuff, and in the past she's focused a lot on nature. Peter, of course, knows the Dharma upside down, and but recently has been doing so much interesting work and research on neurobiology. So we get the benefit of whatever obsession each one of the Dharma speakers has. And so my real interest is in how can I do the practice better to get the benefits that I know are possible from it. So I'm going to begin with a quotation, as I always do, quote of the day. I've been teaching since 19, really early, 1969. And every class I think I've ever taught, I start with a quote of the day. It's just become a lifelong habit. Today it comes from a podcaster whose name is Alec Posey, and he said, "The world is far more complex and impenetrable place than I had ever realized." And I think that's an important sentence to hear in this day and age at this particular moment of time that we're experiencing. But I've been thinking of that sentence in terms of meditation. I sort of replace the word world with mind. My mind is a far more complex and impenetrable place than I ever realized. And that's one of the reasons that I very early in my life became just smitten with the Buddhist teachings, because in my mind, what we are doing is unraveling some of the complexity and some of the seemingly impenetrable aspects of our own minds, so that we can live more fully, more happily, and with more benefit to ourselves and others. So I hope this is not going to be tedious for some of you, but I am going to review the hindrances just in case there's somebody out there that has not studied the hindrances or doesn't understand what those five functions are, five factors of mind. So you may remember last year we did a long series on the four foundations of mindfulness. And of the fourth foundation of mindfulness, which is where we find the hindrances, Joseph Goldstein says, each of the mental and physical elements is called a dhamma or a dharma, or elements of experience and how they function. Anālayo, in his book on the Satipatthana Sutra, says that dhamma means categories of phenomena. Now that's helpful to me, because what the Buddha is doing in this foundation is making a comprehensive list of the basic organizing principles of his teachings. So we might take each of these lists, and that's what the fourth foundation of mindfulness is, really a set of lists. And so we might take these to be lists of mental objects as templates to help us examine our own minds and move toward clarity. So here are the four big lists that comprise the fourth foundation of mindfulness. The hindrances is the first one. The aggregates is the second. The sense spheres is the third. The factors of awakening is the fourth. And the fifth is the Four Noble Truths. Now, so I think that, well, we've had sessions on the four foundations of mindfulness, so I'm not going to go into that so much, other than to say I think it's not insignificant that the hindrances is the very first in this category of lists that the Buddha gives in the fourth foundation. Joseph Goldstein says, again, that in this foundation, the Buddha is showing us how to investigate these truths or these dhammas for ourselves. Okay, investigate is my word now. I'm like, I'm really combing through all my books to look for guidance and instruction and insight about how do we go about investigating. As you can see, the fourth foundation has a huge scope of instruction, and we've been getting some of that from April, as she's been instructing us in the last few weeks too. So you'll see us sort of overlaying and overlapping with each other a little bit, and I hope speaking to each other. We like to think of this as a conversation that's going on between us and you guys. So as we move into the lists of the fourth foundation of mindfulness, the Buddha gives us instruction on the post-meditation investigation and gives us a protocol for how to work with each one of these lists. For people like me who love a good protocol, and I mean, back in the third grade, I loved a protocol. Anybody gives me a protocol, I'm on board. I love it. So that's the way I look at these instructions. as kind of protocols. In my mind, this is like the mother of all self-help books, too. So that's good. So he strategically begins, so Joseph Goldstein says, with the five hindrances, because the hindrances envelop the mind and obstruct it from developing wise discernment regarding skillful and unskillful actions. Let me read that again. The hindrances envelop the mind and obstruct it from developing wise discernment regarding skillful and unskillful actions. Yes, sign me up for that. That's what I want to know. They hinder the mind's developing, the mind as it attempts to develop concentration and other awakening factors, and they prevent the realization of the Four Noble Truths. So, oh my gosh, this is when you read something like that from a tremendous practitioner and scholar, Joseph Goldstein, you can see how that's motivating to read that, because if you know that there are these qualities of mind, these factors of mind that arise in all of us in the course of our practice, and if you know that they keep you from developing your practice, from going deeper into your practice, from developing the level of concentration that is possible for you, or moving into the awakening factors or any other of the lists, then to me, that's just a highly motivating thing to read and to hear. So I want to. I know we've talked about this several times, and this is a phrase that I actually just learned from Peter last year, Atapi Sati Sapajanya. And this is a phrase that translates from the Pali as ardent, mindful, clearly comprehending, and describes a state of heightened awareness crucial in Buddhist meditation practice. So I mentioned this again. I've talked about it in the past, and Peter has talked about it in his text. This has kind of become my mantra lately, Atapi Sati Sapajanya, because really, this is what we want. We want that capacity, atapi, exerting right effort. We want mindfulness. Sati means mindfulness, maintaining awareness. And we want clear comprehending, sapajanya. This is gaining precise wisdom-based understanding of reality. So if you go back to that initial quotation that I gave just a few minutes ago about our minds, the world, and our minds being far more complicated and confusing than we had ever realized, you can see how appealing this kind of language is and how attractive it is to a person seeking to become a meditator. So, as we said, the hindrances obscure such perception and, in effect, hobble us in all that we're trying to do in our practice. So, just like the name implies, they're hindrances, they're things that keep you. They keep you from moving down a path you want to move down. They inhibit your ability to go deeper or to have the clarity, the discernment that you really want and you know is possible from your meditation. Often, these hindrances have become such entrenched parts of our inner landscape that we're not even aware of them. And of course, this is a really dangerous situation when you're experiencing these hindrances, but you're not even aware that there's a mental construct that you need to deal with. So sometimes we're not aware of them, or sometimes we ignore them because who wants to talk about their hindrances? Who wants to look deeply at their flaws and their problems in their meditation or in their life? To notice them, right, would require some sort of action. So often we skillfully avoid action that seems really difficult to undertake. And believe me, The hindrances are a difficult challenge to undertake. I have experienced since the retreat many days of frustration and disorder in trying to understand my own hindrances better. But of course, by noticing them, not noticing them, they are silently impacting our lives in destructive ways and derailing our practice. In the connective discourses, the Buddha said of the hindrances, they are makers of blindness, causing lack of vision, causing lack of knowledge, detrimental to wisdom, tending to vexation, and leading away from Nibbana. Do I need to read that again? It probably made a pretty big impression on you. I hope so. Markers of blindness, causing lack of vision, lack of knowledge, detrimental to wisdom, tending to vexation, leading away from Nibbana. And this is one of my fears with the hindrances, is that if I'm not aware, keenly aware, and able to precisely deal with them in a helpful way, then my practice is, I almost feel like it's wasted. I mean, that may be, I'm just saying that because that's kind of what I feel sometimes. But so here's what I want to do. I want you to think about this quotation from the Buddha that I just read. And in what ways do we as practitioners, or do you as individuals, in what way do you lack vision about yourselves, about yourself, or about others? Most of the suffering that we experience in life comes far from our own inability to have that vision, have that clarity, that clear knowing about ourselves, our own minds, and how it works for us and against us. And the same thing for other people, and developing the compassion and wisdom we need to develop good relationships. I'm sure you all know the five hindrances, but let me read through them again quickly here. And what, as I read through them, I want you to pick one. Now, first of all, we have all the hindrances. All of us have all the hindrances. At some point or another, you will recognize, if you don't have them in your head already, you will recognize these hindrances. And I'm just going to give you some key words that I've gleaned from a lot of different readings about each one of these five hindrances. So the first one is desire, and it might show up as craving comfort. It might show up as a compulsion, lust, wanting things to be a certain way, expecting certain behavior or certain results, and the list goes on. I'm not going to read the whole list, but that gives you an idea that craving and clinging that we all know so very well, whether it's for ice cream at 9 o'clock at night or whether it's craving to be enlightened. That's a wide spectrum of options there. The second hindrance is aversion. It is called, terms that come under this category are words like anger, rage, resentment, indignation, irritation, vexation, discontent, loathing, abhorrence, resistance, avoidance, hatred, dissatisfaction, striking out, running from discomfort, pushing away from what you have judged to be unacceptable, complaining. Oh my God. I want to retract something I said earlier. I said that I didn't think I experienced aversion on my retreat. I take that back. There was quite a bit of irritation for me on that retreat. Okay, so aversion, pushing away. Okay, so desire, you're clinging, you're craving something, you want to pull something to you, you want something to be a certain way. Aversion, kind of the opposite. It's resisting, it's pushing back, it's being filled with discontent or even loathing, ill will. The third is sloth and torpor, and I would venture to say that everyone in this room has experienced this. It is weariness, sleepiness. Sloth and torpor forces in the mind have to do with forces in the mind that drain vitality and limit effort. Lack of vitality is another characteristic of sloth and torpor. The body may feel heavy or lethargic or weary or weak. Lack of mental energy, a mind that's dull and cloudy and easily drifting in thought. I didn't list sleep there, but sloth and torpor shows up in my world as falling asleep. So sloth and torpor we're probably all familiar with. The next one is restlessness or worry. And this has to do with difficulty concentrating and seeing clearly, compulsive energy, impulse to fidget or move, inability to focus, a mind jumping from one thing to the next, a worrier, a person who's anxious, agitated feelings of regret. These all come under the umbrella of restlessness. I see this version of the hindrances in my young students, my college students that I teach, especially males. I see this in males more than in females, where you can't see my knees, but I'm just sort of jiggling my knee up and down. It's just kind of a nervous habit that a lot of teenage and early 20-year-old young men have. I see that as a form of restlessness. There's just a body energy that won't let them reside in a calm state. Becomes a true hindrance to meditating. And then the last hindrance is doubt. Mental preoccupation involving indecision. So I have a very good friend who is riddled with doubt, not just in her practice, but in her life. She has a hard time making a decision on what to order from a menu. She just can't pull the trigger and decide on what's going to be good in her mouth. Uncertainty is another characteristic of doubt. Lack of confidence, hard time settling into meditation or believing that meditation is worthwhile. So, who among us has not gone through a period of time in your practice, no matter how many years or days you've been doing it, where you really wondered, is this working? Is this good? Am I wasting my time? Or sometimes doubt comes in the form of doubting your teacher or just being a doubting Thomas, just everything that is put before you. You have to roll through that lens of challenging it. Okay, so those are the five hindrances. And I really want to say here before we go on that I don't want any of you to think of these as personal flaws. Like they're not irredeemable qualities that just you struggle with. These are qualities that all human minds have. It's just a factor, a function is probably a better word, of the mind, the brain, and what it does. So we don't want to look at these as personal flaws, but we do want to look at them as serious deterrents to what we are striving to do. And again, I want to go back to how important I think it is, and I'll talk about this a little bit later too, but how important I think it is to be reading the Dharma, reading texts, learning from teachers, going to study groups with people. With Peter, I'm going to talk about that a little bit later too, but you have to be studying these things in order to have the skillful means of observing them within your own mind. So not personal flaws, just habituated patterns that we all fall prey to and we can eliminate, or we can certainly downregulate a lot. So it's important to recognize them and not to blame yourself, but to gain skill in disarming them if they are hindering you from moving forward in your meditation or in your life. And chances are If one of these hindrances is showing up in your meditation, it's also showing up in other aspects of your life. So I'm going to break the pattern typically that we typically do with these Dharma talks, and I'm going to ask you to do a very short reflection with me, a guided, it's not a meditation, it's a guided reflection. And before I start guiding you in this reflection, I want you to think about which one of these five hindrances seems to be larger in your life than the others. Is there one that you could sort of say, "Oh yeah, that's me. I'm doubt is a problem for me, or desire is a problem for me, sloth and torpor." So I want you to think about one only because we only have so much time. And I'm just going to take you through a very short reflection process here so that you've spent a little time engaging your own mind with this idea. So close your eyes and just sit very comfortably and make sure your shoulders are relaxed, your hands are resting easily in your lap. Try to release any tension you may feel in the body, just as you would in preparation for a meditation. And then bring yourself to the attention of your breath. And just for a moment or two, let's really focus our concentration on the breath, breathing in through the nose and out through the nose, keeping the lips lightly closed, breathing in your natural, even, regular breathing process. And think about this hindrance that you've chosen. Can you remember in the last 45 minutes when you meditated, becoming distracted by one of the hindrances? Did you get lost in thought? Did you start thinking about something you want to do or something you want to accomplish? Did you start fantasizing about a new family room you're going to add to your home? Did you think you'd really love to buy that pair of shoes you saw on the new Me and M flyer today? I did. I found a pair of shoes I wanted to buy. Does this hindrance that you have cause discomfort in your body or in your mind or both? Is it caused by some discomfort that you hold? Or is it caused by a feeling of love or appreciation? These are not questions you can answer now. I just want to get you in the mind frame, mindset of thinking about what it feels like to experience that hindrance. Does this hindrance come often at certain times of the day or your practice, maybe most often in your evening practice, or maybe most often in your morning practice? What does it mean? Do you ever think about why do I keep planning? That's my form of rumination. Why do I keep planning? What's with it? What's with my mind that is obsessed with planning? So sometimes we can use these triggers, we can use these hindrances as of ways to really examine habit patterns that you might think of just natural habit patterns that a human mind has, but when you really look at it closely, you see it's not constructive. It's not helpful. Does this particular hindrance that you frequently experience happen often? Or maybe infrequently, maybe you don't frequently experience it. And is there a way that you typically deal with it when you find yourself lost in thought about some aversion of life or some discontent that you have? Do you try to figure that out? Do you try to investigate that or get curious about it in some way? Does this hindrance make you feel bad about your practice? That's a big one. We've been taught in the study of the first three foundations of mindfulness. We've been taught how to bring our attention back to the breath and let go of whatever the distraction or the hindrance was. So I ask you, as my last thought for you, to think about how much robustness exists in this hindrance for you. It eventually goes away, right? Always, all things go away, but some things hang on a little bit longer than others. So, how robust is this hindrance? And does it feel like an uphill battle to deal with it? Or have you even ever thought of the process that you might go through in dealing with it? Take a deep breath in, please, through your nose, and exhale through your nose. And when you feel comfortable, you can open your eyes and return back to the Zoom room. Thank you very much for engaging in that way. So one of the best sources there you can find information on the hindrances virtually every place. Almost everybody that's written a book on meditation has in some way or manner address the hindrances. But I want to introduce you, if you haven't already heard about this book by Gil Fronsdale called Unhindered, A Mindful Path Through the Five Hindrances. Oh my gosh, you guys. Also, I'll tell you the other thing that I'm finding out in my identity as a Dharma teacher. I'm calling myself the book lady now because that's pretty much always what I do with you. I find a book that I really like, and then I kind of try to unravel it for myself and hopefully unravel it for you a little bit too. Peter told me about this last year when I was doing some research on the hindrances, and I have used this as a textbook in several workshops that I've done on the hindrances. I highly recommend it. It's not even 100 pages. It's like 92 pages long, big print. It's really a quick read, but so packed with short, clear, concise, detailed examples of how the hindrances manifest in our lives, as well as brief descriptions of what causes and conditions might have led to a particular hindrance. And that's kind of what I'm interested in. This is one of the questions I'm going to ask Peter when we get into the Q&A, because I, as a person who is at this point in my practice life, so interested in the investigation process. So we sit and we meditate, and then after we meditate, we can go through a post-meditation investigation. And that's what this book is all about, post-meditation investigation. And so I really think if you wanted to put together a study group just on your own and work through the hindrances, I don't see Susan here tonight, but Susan was in that workshop, and April was too, that they'll vouch for me that this is really just a great guide for doing a protocol of learning how to be more discerning in the way you address the problems that you're having in your meditation. So That book, along with Joseph Goldstein's Mindfulness and Shayla Catherine's book, Beyond Distraction, which we've talked about on a number of occasions here. This was a book that Peter did last year in a book study. It's just unbelievably fabulous. This book is so helpful, and especially in the way she addresses, the subtitle is Five Practical Ways to Focus the Mind. So she really deals with the hindrances in an interesting way, and she has a very interesting protocol for a post-meditation investigation, which is going to be the topic of my next talk, part two of this three-part talk I'm going to do. You're going to be sick of the hindrances in a short period of time. So those three books are, among many, many others, but those are really offer a good bit of what any student of the Dharma would want to know. These three scholars agree that recognizing the hindrances and accepting that they are present is vitally, vitally, vitally important to the serious student of Buddhist teachings. But of course, what we ultimately want most is strategies. So I don't want you just to go through the book and read descriptions of what the hindrances are. I want you to learn or I want to learn, and I want you to help me learn too, strategies for disarming those hindrances. When it comes to firmly entrenched patterns in our psychology, recognition is necessary, of course, but it is not sufficient. And it is often very painful. So really just doing something like we just did, a short reflection where you're just being asked to try to figure out which of these five hindrances seems to be most prevalent in your mind. So what I want to get to is the protocol part. I want to get to the strategies part. So I'm going to very quickly go over four different, ultimately it will be five different protocols for dealing with the hindrances. And the first one, I'm going to go through these pretty quickly. And then the last one that we're actually going to spend a little more time on, I'll ask Peter to let me share the hosting so I can do a screen share with you. But Joseph Goldstein, in his book called Mindfulness, has a very traditional, it's almost like the language of the Buddha. It's a very traditional way of working with the hindrances, very, very close to the words in the sutra. And here it is. Recognize desire when it is present. No, we're taking the first hindrance, of course, desire here. Know when desire is absent. Know what conditions underlie the presence or absence of desire. Know what conditions underlie the removal of desire. And finally, avoid future arising of such desire. That's, as I said, very close to the sutra, what the Buddha says. And both the Buddha and not Peter, Joseph Goldstein go into more detail. But essentially, these are the directives that are given. Now, if I had those up on the screen for you, or just, I'm sure you could tell just from hearing them, recognize when desire is present, know when desire is absent, know what conditions underlie. Oh, those are great questions, but oh, how do I do that? That requires skill. And this is where I think I derailed myself a minute ago when I was going to say, I'm going to ask Peter when we get into the Q&A about when does post-meditation investigation begin to slam into therapy? That's a really big question, but I want to try to go there. Bhante G, who is another author that Peter introduced to me, and we did a couple of study groups with his books. He has a similar sounding list of a protocol for dealing with it. Know when hindrance is present, know when hindrance is absent, know what to do to make hindrance go away, know how to keep hindrance from coming back. Okay, that's really great. That's sort of like a doctor standing over a very ill patient in a hospital bed, in a hospital room, and saying, "Get well." You might, if you were cogent enough, you might say back to that doctor, "Could you give me a protocol for getting well? And I will definitely get well." So here I am searching for protocols. So in the insight meditation tradition, I know many of you know this protocol. It's called the RAIN formula for investigating the hindrances. And I'm not going to go into that in much detail, other than to say that's going to be the third part of this talk, which will happen in December. So in November, I think. In October, I'll talk about Shyla Catherine, and then in November, I'll talk about RAIN and the kind of helpfulness that that protocol helps. So, just a quick reminder for those of you that aren't familiar with the RAIN formula, it's an anagram that stands for recognize the hindrance, accept it, investigate it, get real curious about it. What is it like? What does it feel like? What does it make me think about or feel or want to do or not do? And then finally, non-identification, which is a process that comes, understanding that it is a process that comes and goes, that the hindrance is going to go away. It is not who we are. And I know I've talked about this before, so I'm not going to go into it in too much detail, but as a college teacher, I dealt with students in their learning skills a lot, and their bad habits in their learning skills, or their hindrances to their capacity for communicating or interpreting literature or doing any number of things you might do in an English class. And I would sit down with them to talk with them about their papers or about their performance in class. And so many young people want to say to me, "Oh, but Dr. Laws, that's just the way I am. I'm just, my mind is just flighty. That's why I can't do that. I can't write the way you're asking me to write." Well, my answer to that is not yet, but soon you will be able. You want to get rid of the, in other words, the point I'm trying to make here is that I've seen this in myself, and I've seen this in my students, and I see this in my friends all the time. This belief that a problem that they have, whether it's a psychological problem or an emotional problem, that it's an inherent part of their being. So impermanence is a hard lesson to teach on the fly, and I've learned that it's dangerous to try to teach it on the fly too, but anyway, so that's RAIN. So now we've got three different protocols that I've shared with you. And then the last one that we're going to focus on for the few minutes that we have left is the one that comes from this book, Unhindered by Gil Fronsdale. So I'm not going to take the time to screen share it because I'm just going to read this protocol. This is why I like the Fronsdale book so much, because I think his protocol is more specific, it's more concrete. And if you have a pen or pencil, you might want to just write these down because you're going to have some homework to do between now and October 22nd, which is the next time you'll see me. So here's his protocol. It's called BELLA. BELLA. I love these acronyms. BELLA, BELLA. So for the next few weeks, I want you to be thinking about the hindrances, how they affect your practice, how they affect your life, and then see if you can begin to apply this protocol to examining your own personal habituation to a hindrance. So the first one, as not surprising, is be with it. Be with it. Well, first of all, he doesn't say this, but I think it's implied by this, but most of the others have said, note it and name it, right? That's one of the primary teachings of the Buddha. Note and name the feeling, discontent, or whatever it is. No, note it. So he says, be with it. Let it be, he says. See it. Accept it. Name it. So that's right there about 90% of the job, because you've identified a problem. It's like having a disease, but you don't know what the disease is until somebody diagnoses it and gives it a name and then gives it a protocol for being dealt with in the physical body. So be with it. So don't beat up on yourself. Don't shame yourself. Don't say, damn it, why does my mind keep doing that over and over? This is what I do. I can tell you personally, personal experience, I beat up on myself in my own meditation. It's pretty pathetic. So be with it, then examine it. This is where utmost care and compassionate understanding must come into play. The examining of our patterns, as I've said before, is often very painful and even embarrassing sometimes. But we examine whatever rises up in consciousness, right? With diligence and honesty. Now, if you were in the talk that I gave last month on my retreat experience, I talked to you about my hindrance of desire. And I'm going to talk to you about that again next month, not tonight, but I was embarrassed to admit it to you, but I wanted to confess it. And I wanted to deal with it. So this is an important part then, is once you've identified the hindrance, is examine it with diligence and honesty. Just be fair to yourself and say, this is a normal function of a human mind, and I'm going to watch it. I'm going to look at it, and I'm going to see what I can do to disarm it. So the third in his protocol is, now we're getting to the L's of Bella. So there's be with it, B, examine it, E, lessen it. So he says, and I am 100% in agreement on this, relaxing the body and the mind lessens the intensity of the hindrance. So if you did nothing more than a body scan and really went through and relaxed the body, that would do a lot right there after having identified it, examined it, and then just let it, just lessen it. The second L in Bella is called let go. Dropping or changing the thinking that perpetuates the hindrance. Now, this is a tough one, I think, and we'll have enough time to get into this, because Peter has spoken so many times and so beautifully on letting go and the importance of the letting go process, and just letting go of thoughts, just letting go of deterrence of any sort. And because the letting go thing, I think, has so much to do with our self-identity, I think this is why it's difficult. Maybe this is just unique to me, but I don't know. I'll be interested in hearing if it's a cha if that's a challenging thing for you to do in your own examination of your practice. But it's so important in this letting go process to come to see how the hindrance is a part of your selfing story. And I learned so much in the last few weeks of doing this process and examining my own hindrance of desire that I experienced on the retreat about the selfing story that, oh my gosh, you guys, it's just huge. I just feel amazed at the kind of understanding that I've been given about this. And then, so Bella, Bella, the last letter is A, and that stands for appreciate. And I love this one. This is not one you see in any other of the books that I have read. I do not see this. I don't have knowledge. I've not read all of the discourses of the Buddha, but I don't even have no knowledge of the Buddha using this notion of appreciation when it comes to disarming the hindrances. Gil Fronsdale says appreciation is such an important part of this protocol. He doesn't call it a protocol. You might not like my using that word. I love protocols, so it's just a system of examining something. And he says appreciating the times we become free of our hindrance is really important to note. And this is why when I work with the other groups that I work with privately, I insist that my students take time to share their experiences with appreciating something that they've observed or something that they've happened, something that has happened to them in their meditation. Because first of all, it helps them instantiate that concept for themselves, but it also helps the rest of us in the room go, "Oh, that is so cool. That is so wonderful. Oh, wow, yeah. That's happened to me too. I just never made note of it." So, yeah, I'm sure nobody remembers this, but one of the talks I did last year was on right effort, and our dear April is going to be talking about right effort pretty soon. And so I mentioned in that talk on right effort the work of Rick Hansen, who is a teacher of Buddhism and also a psychotherapist. He's written some really wonderful books on Buddhism. And he advocates the practice that he calls taking in the good. I used to make my writing students do this when we were doing workshops about their writing drafts. Taking in the good. Let's take in the good things that somebody said about your piece of writing. And Rick Hansen says this too. In our practice, we have to take in the good things that have happened, note them and name them just the way we note and name the challenging things that are happening to us. He says taking in the good is a powerful method for reordering the neural pathways. So you don't want to drop that part of the protocol because you really want to rewire yourself to letting go or to understanding when you have been free. And remember, in the earlier protocols, that's one that the Buddha says, be aware when you're free of the hindrance, just as you're aware when you're not free of it. So as I've said already, I love this book. It's just so usable. And if you do want to take up a private practice or with a group of working through the hindrances, I highly recommend it. And though I really love Fronsdale's method, Bella, I prefer to use Shayla Catherine's extremely thoughtful and helpful process for investigating the hindrances. In Beyond Distraction, she gives insightful descriptions of the hindrances and provides antidotes and alternatives for handling them. Very, very instructive book. And she emphasizes that mindfulness, and just about everybody who writes about the hindrances says this at some point in their writing, that mindfulness is the universal antidote for handling the hindrances, for all of the hindrances. When the mind, this is a quote from Shayla Catherine, when the mind is undisturbed, a wellspring of energy becomes available for deep spiritual practice. So, that being said, beyond our practice, we must engage in investigation of our thinking in order to achieve the insight that we want. And so, next month, I'll be taking us through another protocol for investigation. But to conclude, I want to give you a little bit of homework. As I said, I want you to think about all of the hindrances if you want. Take some notes. Maybe ill will doesn't exist in your of hindrances. Maybe you want to just work on one for the next month or so. But I'll be asking you, the teacher that I am, there won't be a written quiz, but I'll be asking you what you discovered, what you came up with in trying to apply this protocol of Bella to your own practice. Now, I do want to say one other thing before I conclude my comments here, and that is I have come to see five components as such an important part of my practice. Solo sitting, I've gone through this list before with you, but solo sitting, sitting in group with Sangha, like we do every Wednesday, going on retreats, longer retreats, starting small one day and then building up more and more.
공법의 한바다에서 신입 변호사로 일하게 된 우영우라고 합니다.
I agree.
신입 오기로 한게 오늘이었나? 아,
Is that John? You need to mute. I lost my train of thought there, sorry. The fourth, after the retreat process, the fourth category is reading and studying the Dharma. So I don't know how I managed to do this, but I started when I was 20 years old studying the wisdom traditions. And every day I would get up really early in the morning before I had to go to school and teach high school at 7:30 in the morning. And I would do my practice and read some sort of inspirational book, the Dharma, or it might have been reading the Tao Te Ching or the just a whole range of texts in the wisdom tradition. And just 20 minutes a day, and over the course of my lifetime, I've got quite a list of books that I've read. And I think study is absolutely necessary to help us intensify our practice and get more out of our practice. And then I want to give a plug for the study groups that Peter does. If you have never experienced a study group with Peter Carlson, I'm begging you to do it. And this is the book we're going to use this time. It's so fabulous. We've done it before, but it was requested by many people to do it again. It's by Peter. I've forgotten the name of the book. He'll tell you later. So, meets on Saturday or Sunday afternoon for an hour and a half. There are usually five to six or seven people in the group. And you'll get to see Peter going through the investigation process in a way that is really enlightening, really helpful. And so I have come to see the study, not just the study, but my reading and the study with a good teacher. So having a good teacher. And oh my gosh, you guys, how lucky are we that we have Peter Carlson as our founder and teacher in at Orlando Insight. So happy about that. So I'm going to stop talking now that I've given you some protocols and giving you an assignment. I've talked a long time. So any quick questions or observations or intuitions that you would like to share?
I don't know if you can hear me, Leslie.
Yes, Sharon, I can hear
Hey.
you. Good.
Yeah, when you were talking about rumination, it's a biggie for me in hindrances, and I had this image pop up in my head about anybody who remembers a record, meaning the discs of vinyl that people used to listen to music on. And sometimes they would develop some kind of a place where they would not keep going. And they would just get stuck and
Yeah.
keep going in one small area. And I know I'm dating myself when I say that, but if you haven't ever experienced that to me is like rumination.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor, Sharon.
Yeah,
And Buddhism
and
calls
what
that,
happened?
and Hinduism calls that samsara, the cycle, the repetitive cycle.
Yeah, that's what it is, Peter. Absolutely, and that to me is one of my big, big problems. And when I get like that, I have to bring myself into the present moment. But if I'm stuck like that, it could go on way too long.
Yeah.
So becoming focused and breaking that little skipping area where it just won't move. It just stays there.
Absolutely.
Thank you for letting me share
More
that.
Practice.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. That's a really great image for us, because I remember vinyl. Actually, vinyl is coming back, Sharon. So there are actually a lot of young people who know a lot about vinyl these days. So it's a good, it holds up as a metaphor. But I think a couple of things. First of all, the fact that you've recognized it, that you're able to engage with it in a metaphorical way like that, is a sign that you are dealing with the very hindrance that you're concerned about. So well done, well done.
Yeah, thank you. And I just know that it always is something to deal with. And I'm grateful that Gil Fronsdell has named it, and or at least pointed to that as a hindrance.
Absolutely. Anybody else have a observation or question about the homework, or question about hindrances in general?
I would like very much to appreciate the presentation you've made tonight, Leslie. Very coherent.
Thank you so much.
Very useful.
So you guys know, thank you, Laura. I just got a heart from Laura. You guys know what it feels like to get a compliment from your teacher. And Peter, we don't have time now, but when I do my next talk on Shyla Catherine's protocol, I really do want to get into this issue of where does genuine investigation spill over into therapy? I'm sure that's something you have some thoughts about, right?
That's something you can ask on the open mic night too.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing I should have mentioned. That now we have a regular session of open mic with Peter. It's not always on the third Wednesday, but it often is the third Wednesday of the month. And those are fabulous sessions too, because it's just question and answers, and he's got lots of answers. So,
and you've got lots of questions, I hope. As is our custom, let's sit together briefly. Thank you for your practice. Wish you well. Hope we're all reasonably safe and happy until next time we have a chance to chat together.